Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Chet Haas on the Android UI Toolkit team. Tor has abandoned us this week, so we're going to try to make do without him. Sad, but we'll proceed on. And today we have...
I'm David Serre. I'm the manager of the Android Runtime team here in Mountain View.
And
I'm Matthew. I'm one of the runtime engineers. Did work on garbage collection in the past, and now I'm working on some Android Go stuff.
All right. So it's interesting. I think when a lot of people hear manager, they probably think, oh, non-technical person. But that is like strictly not true at Google.
No, definitely not. Actually, I should have said tech lead manager, but that gets a little geeky in the Google terminology.
Yep. So it does. And I actually don't know. I assume that that is true for Google as a whole because it's a very technical company. But certainly Android, you basically start managing because somebody needs to.
Yeah, definitely. So, that's been the career arc that I had at Google. Was I was the senior techie on the task when somebody said, "You know, hey, how about that junior guy over there? Maybe he could report to you instead of just taking technical direction from you." So, that's been the arc that I've taken.
Yeah, something we have to do. Not necessarily the career choice we aim for, but in the meantime, much code is written and technology shipped. So today, I wanted to talk about some of the art stuff that we saw come out in the preview releases for O at I/O. I know that you had a talk that you gave at I/O, so we'll talk about some of that stuff, but also just kind of GC and the collector and memory and everything behind it. So maybe we'll start with a summary of like what are the recent changes in O that people should know about.
So in O, what we've done is we basically shipped a completely new garbage collector.
Yay!
So previously we had a concurrent mark sweep, which was basically a non-moving garbage collector that was used in the foreground for most of the applications. And now we've moved to a concurrent copying collector, which means that it moves objects while the Java threads are still running.
Okay, so actually, can I stop you and back up a little bit because I find this really interesting. Can you explain a little more completely what both systems are? So concurrent mark sweep.
Okay, so concurrent mark sweep is but doesn't move objects. Normally it does... I guess you do a depth first traversal and you basically mark all the objects on the heap when you reach them. So that means that when the GC is done, you can know exactly which objects are no longer reachable. And that's what it basically uses to reclaim memory, is it'll free those objects.
Okay, and how often does this happen? Like, is it only when it needs memory, then it'll do the GC where it marks everything?
I think usually the way that it's done is it's based on the current heap size. So the current heap size will be allowed to grow, say, 20% before the next GC happens, and it'll keep doing that. If the heap's growing, it'll get bigger and bigger, and if it gets smaller, then the GC will happen less frequently.
Okay, and then there's the really bad situation where it's the stop the world GC because somebody wants memory and there's none left, right?
Yeah, so in the worst case scenario, if you're hitting the maximum heap size, then obviously we need to stop the allocating thread until there's actually any memory available for it. So in that case, you get a stop the world GC, which normally causes jank, and it's not very good to have in general.
Okay. So it's concurrent, which means it's running in parallel. So let's take it even further back. What did we have before concurrent mark sweep? Was this Dalvik? Like, did Art always have the CMS?
Dalvik had a stop the world GC, but I think it got a concurrent garbage collector in I think it was maybe Gingerbread,
okay,
or ICS.
Okay.
Not 100% sure there. But they also had a concurrent mark sweep garbage collector. There was some differences that made the Art one a little bit superior, in my opinion, though.
Because you worked on it?
Yeah, of course. No.
So like what?
So we changed some of the ergonomics to basically allow the allocating thread to go a little bit past the watermark. So in Dalvik, there was a point at which the GC was triggered before some set watermark in the heap size. And if you're allocated and you hit the watermark when the GC wasn't completed yet, you'd get basically a stop the world allocation that would block until the garbage collector was
okay.
Done.
So you have a bit more buffer in Art.
Yeah, so we let the allocating threads go a little bit past the watermark so that we don't get the scenario where the allocating thread gets blocked for a long time.
Okay.
And also we did some other work to reduce the pause times. We cut the number of pauses from 2 to 1. By using some checkpoints, which is basically getting Java threads to do a little bit of work and then continue executing after they're done.
Okay. It seems tricky to have pauseless GC just because, like, you're going in and marking and freeing objects while other well, other things in the system may be referring to them, right? Like, or changing them out from under you. Like, how does the concurrency, how does that happen?
Well, the thing to deal with concurrency is normally there's a write barrier. So a write barrier is kind of a little bit of work that's done when you're doing a write to a heap object.
Okay.
So the way that the GC uses this is it can keep track of what objects were modified during the garbage collection, and then it can kind of rescan those objects at the end to make sure there's no cases where we missed seeing some reachable objects when we were doing the traversal.
Okay, right. So that's the second pass.
Yes, and that's what's done in the pause normally.
Okay, right. So this is that was the last holdout pause that the art collector had, right, prior to the new system.
Right? Yeah.
Which is an excellent segue. Okay, so how does the new system work then? The concurrent, I wrote down CCC, and a concurrent must be one of those words.
Yeah, so we either say concurrent copying or concurrent compacting. But yeah. So the way that the new system works differently is instead of doing work mostly on writes and then rescanning the heap in the pause, it basically has work that's done on object reads. So anytime you read an object and it's not already marked, then there's a logic called a read barrier that marks that object and or copies it if required. Basically, that means that threads can only ever see objects that are either marked or copied by the GC already.
Okay, and what's the advantage of copying them? I was thinking of copying in terms of like defrag.
Yeah, so copying is basically used to enable defrag. The garbage collect new garbage collector has some heuristics that it tries to defragment basically regions, which are continuous sections of memory, if they are less than 80% full.
Okay. If it's less than, wait, it's only compacting when it's less than? I didn't follow that.
Yeah, because if the region is 100% full, then there's basically no fragmentation in that region.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But if it gets to 20% wasted RAM, then yeah, that's the case where we start compacting.
Okay. And then how expensive is the copy? Like, you're moving bits around. It's got to be more expensive than just leaving them there, except for the fragmentation issues in the long run.
Yeah, that's true. Copying is a little bit more expensive, but the way that we kind of mitigate that is we only copy a small portion of the heap each time. Because you'll find the normal behavior for applications is that regions will eventually start getting full, and then they won't be copied for several GCs because they'll kind of stop changing after a while.
Okay. Do you always, these are probably really stupid questions. I'm sorry, I don't work on collectors. Do you always copy to the same region? So let's say there's a particular region that has, 75% utilization, so you're going to start copying stuff around, right? Do you always copy it to the beginning of that region, or do you have like a heat map of where things live and you try to collect them there?
So the way that we do the copying is there's basically a region that we're copying to.
Yeah.
And there's a whole bunch of regions that we're copying from. And then whenever the region we're copying to becomes full, then we get a new region and start copying to that one. So basically it always is copying to a single region.
I see. Okay, so you're not compacting like all within a single region. You're compacting from that region into anywhere else in memory.
Basically,
really
compacting from a set of regions to however many regions will be required to copy all the reachable objects out of those regions.
Is there an issue with locality? Because now you're moving things around, and they may be like two things that used to be used together may be copied to a place where they are no longer together. Is there an issue with performance due to that?
I think usually locality should improve with copying objects because we have a depth-first traversal. And I think historically depth-first traversals tend to copy objects that are kind of referencing each other to be close together.
Okay. All right. So two fields in the same structure won't necessarily be associated, but a structure that refers to another structure will end up being copied together.
Yeah. That's the idea there.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that's the basic. So what did it give us? What are the dynamics with the new system that are, hopefully better than the old one that we had? So we have no pauses now?
So there's a very brief pause at the start, but the main key difference there is that the pause doesn't really scale with the heap size anymore. It only really scales with the number of threads. In the previous GC, the concurrent mark sweep one, the pause scaled with the heap size because we need to scan basically one card for each 128 bytes of heap.
Yeah.
But the new GC doesn't really have that additional work in the pause. So it's basically no matter how large your heap is, your pause will always be around the same amount.
Okay. So is it doing, it sounds like it may actually be doing a little bit more work than before because it's doing a copy operation as well, but that work is hidden because it can happen in parallel with everything else going on. Is that right?
Yeah, it depends on the workloads. There's some cases where the old GC will be collecting faster, but since it's usually asynchronous, then it can be hard to really notice that anything's right. Different there.
Yeah, I mean, I think the perceived performance is certainly better because you don't get these pause times. So you're not going to get a 5-millisecond pause that pushes you over your frame boundary, right?
Yeah, that's the idea.
Yeah. Okay. And what are you seeing for performance? I mean, I guess it's difficult. It's a difficult area to sort of track the performance, right? Because a lot of it is perceived performance, and it depends on the situation.
Yeah, that's correct. There's some improvements to the allocator. So one difference there is because we are always compacting, we can have a kind of a thread local bump pointer allocator,
right?
Which is a little bit simpler and fewer instructions compared to the free list one that concurrent mark sweep garbage collector use. So there's some speed up there. I don't remember the exact percent, but
okay. So this means, dumb it down for me. Bump pointer. So instead of actually doing a full allocation of that space and then going in and collecting it and having to do the whole mark operation, like you're moving the pointer up and then back. Like it's just that simple to allocate. Is it short-lived objects that benefit from this or everybody?
I think it's just everybody in general. So basically the bump pointer just means you're only incrementing a pointer each allocation. There's a little bit extra work there for just making sure you have enough room in the current thread local buffer and things like that. But it's still a lot of fewer instructions compared to managing a free list.
Okay.
It should be fewer instructions and also less cache thrash potentially. As you traverse free lists, you may end up having to walk across multiple cache lines, whereas just bumping a pointer, you get a local chunk of memory as well.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
So one of the questions is always in my mind whenever I hear about improvements in art allocations and collections is when can we stop worrying about local allocations, right? So a lot of the core framework code and the APIs that we have are built with the old world assumptions that Dalvik gave us and constrained devices gave us, where if you allocate it, it'll have to be collected, it'll cause a GC, and it may cause jank. Right, so you avoid allocations at all costs. Obviously, you need to allocate occasionally, but you try really, really hard not to allocate in the inner loop, which is why we have methods that don't take objects as parameters or don't return objects that need to be allocated, because if you're going to be calling that method, some drawing method in your inner loop, we don't want to cause an allocation that may trigger a GC, right? So every time I hear about improvements with, concurrency or whatever it is, I always wonder, does that go away? Can we just start allocating things now?
Well, I think that the allocation rate improvements that he was talking about before with bump pointer allocation makes it less expensive to allocate the objects initially. Hopefully the concurrent collection makes it less noticeable when you're collecting those behind the scenes.
Yep.
But also we have compiler folks that are working pretty hard to try and ameliorate these issues on the other side. And that is when you allocate little objects that don't escape from methods, we try very hard to load store eliminate those and actually turn those into things that are using the registers on the processor rather than actually creating heap objects and retaining them. Other optimizations that try and avoid the memory allocations where we can.
Okay. So does that carry over to objects that you would allocate to return from a method?
So classically the term escape means that it could be, if something returns from a method, it is something that cannot be allocated on the stack.
Yeah.
There are some exotic academic solutions to this that involve allocating them on the caller stack. If you know that this is going to happen, we're not pursuing that at the moment. But if we're doing something locally, you mentioned that if we're inside a loop and we're basically creating an object just as a temporary and then using it, accessing some members of that object and then abandoning it, those sorts of patterns we try and recognize, knowing that the reference to that object can't be passed out of the method.
Right.
But stores to globals to return values, et cetera, those are the kinds of things that traditionally are escapes that would have to be heap allocated objects as opposed to being stack allocated or better yet, promoted to registers.
Yeah. Okay. So less chance of these things actually triggering any kind of GC because they're stack allocated and deallocated, so that's easy. And then at the same time, if it does trigger a GC because of all the concurrency that we can take advantage of, maybe it's something that you won't notice. Right. I remember in the, was it the N release where, I forget what advancement there was. It was cutting down on the pause times where all of a sudden you would go from a pause time of 20 to 30 milliseconds down to 3 to 5 milliseconds. Like there were some numbers being bandied about in some of the presentations, I think, where it was just a significant chunk. That wasn't going from Dalvik to ART, was it?
That was probably Dalvik to ART, actually.
Okay. So all right. So maybe that was when we enabled that ART
by
default.
Yeah, Mollipop, I think, in that case.
Okay. All right. So then this is the next sort of big one after that where you're going to see theoretically smaller. Well, you're not going to see those pause times at all, right?
Yes. The idea is that the application shouldn't really have to worry about pause anymore.
Yeah.
And I guess you still ideally want fewer GCs because kind of will take CPU time and
sure
cause power draw and things like that. But
yeah, so it's still taking effort. It just may not be as, it may not be the perceived jank on the user side.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So we'll still avoid allocating when we can, but it's not as horrible as it used to be then.
Maybe you sort of already touched on this, but another of the big advantages, right, keeping the heap size smaller through compaction allows us to reduce the amount of dirty memory that we're actually using on the device. And dirty memory is something that can't be paged, something that consumes a resource on the device that if you're trying to flip between multiple applications, it makes that more difficult. You're going to have to kill an application occasionally when you get too many that have dirty memory claims.
Right.
Compacting the heap frequently like this enables the possibility to have more applications in that recents list that you can actually get to quickly.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, go ahead.
So yeah, we did see a reduction in the heap sizes. I think for the IO slides, I had measured a 32% reduction in heap size after booting a device.
Whoa. Okay. So this is just all the system apps that come up? So we're able to compact those?
We did have compaction before, but it was kind of only in the background because it was paused for the entire duration of the GC. So since we can now compact in the foreground, there's a lot of things like GMS core and system server and those things that are kind of really never in a background state. So they weren't getting compacted before, but now they are.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, and just users apps like that, that's just counting the system like after it boots up, right? But once the user actually starts running their, you know, mail client or whatever they're going to do playing their games, it's kind of nice if those things can be defragged as well. I mean, for the task killer operation that you were talking about, Dave, where the larger you are, the more likely it is you're going to get killed in the background if they're doing something else simply because the system runs out of memory and it's going to look for big targets, right?
Right.
Huh. Was it N when we started doing background defragmentation?
I think it was in Lollipop.
It was. When we first switched to ART, that was automatic defrag?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
The ART that was in KitKat, though, didn't have that. I think that was only for a Lollipop.
Okay. And the ART that was in KitKat was the optional one, right?
Yeah, that was the one that was enabled through a developer option.
Okay. Okay. So we've had defrag since then. So now we have defrag for foreground operations. Is there any more expense to that, or that's just part of the copying operation that you're talking about already? So there's nothing magical. It's just that we can now do it in foreground applications, whereas we used to wait. Why was that? Because we had to pause the world for those apps?
Yeah, so basically it was pausing the world, so it would kind of get a notification from the activity manager when the process state changed to a non-jank perceptible one, is what we called them. Things like cached or previous and those types of ones. Those would be non-jank perceptible, so we'd compact the process when the process changed, process state changed to one of those states.
Okay. All right. So now everything's small. It would be interesting. I mean, it's one of those benchmarky problems again, like how do you get the real world data on this? But to know, you know, on a random user's phone, how big is stuff now compared to what it was before? I mean, maybe it'd be hard to track because they would simply be running more applications, right? So it's not that they would be using less memory, but that they could have more of those things in recents because those tasks wouldn't be killed.
Well, I think the key thing is when an application is running, if it's the foreground application and it's doing lots of allocations and things, you really don't see these kinds of issues until it sort of hits the limits when it starts to conflict with, as he says, GMS core or system server or something that's running that he's not aware of. So you know, if it's really for systems where you're sort of up against the edge, where you're getting close to the amount of memory that the system has, then that you'll see the effects of this. So we think that especially on lower memory devices, this is going to be a significant improvement for us. And also then for the having multiple applications in recents that you can see this improvement.
Right. So speaking of low memory devices, are there heuristics that are used in configuring the GC when you boot up on a particular device? Like, do you specify that the heap size will go to some limit that is a percentage of the RAM on the device?
There's a few like heap configurations and things like that. For example, a low memory device might have a maximum heap size of 192 megs okay. instead of 512.
And this is hard-coded on the device?
I think it's based on the DPI and some other configuration files in the frameworks. But,
okay.
But it's part of the operating system build that's
yeah.
that's done.
Okay, so it's not a runtime configuration. So that's the max. So that's your heap limit, and then if you get anywhere near there, you're going to stop the world and start collecting things.
Yeah. There's basically two heap limits. There's a small and large heap. So you can specify in your manifest if you need a large heap.
Please don't.
Yeah, I recommend not doing that. But
right, I think that was put there because there are some applications like. I forget, you know, if you're a video editing application, you're simply going to need more memory, right? So it's sort of a fail-safe for those applications, but the other applications that opt into it basically end up with a situation you were talking about where then we're just going to start killing your application because it's simply too big, right? So yeah, hopefully apps aren't doing that and don't have as much need to now that we can sort of compact and manage stuff more efficiently.
Yeah, hopefully.
Okay, so you have this max heap size, let's say it's, 192 or whatever, but you start out smaller, right? So you start out at some percentage of that, and then you bump it up by some percentage when they run out of that. Like, how does the system operate?
So basically the apps will start with a very small heap. So apps fork off the zygote.
Yep.
They basically have a new heap, a fresh heap from the zygote that'll, say, be the minimum heap size, which could be like 512K. The 2 megs, I think, depending on the device. And then when you start getting to that heap size, then it'll grow the heap based on the current reachable set of objects after the GC. So after the GC is finished, it kind of knows how many objects were freed. It knows the current live set of objects and also knows how many bytes those objects are. And then it'll basically grow the heap by taking that size and multiplying it by, say, 1.5 or something like that.
Okay.
And then you get that much more allocation space before the next GC happens.
And then it just grows exponentially. Like the next time it does allocation, the same thing.
Yeah.
It grows the heap. So how many times does the heap grow for a typical, at least an application with UI? I mean, it sounds like if you start at 512, you're going to end up bumping that thing a lot by the time you get to a usable size, right?
Yeah, it's a good point. But the heap can grow like when the GC is still running. So I mean, it depends. Like, you might have a few GCs during launch, or maybe there'll be only one GC if your app is pretty optimized. But I think there's maybe some plans there to kind of make GCs less likely to happen during application launch for those reasons.
Okay.
To leave a little bit more time for the UI threads and stuff to get up and running.
I know in the IDE that I use, so when I use IntelliJ, like when you're working on framework and IntelliJ, you're going to need a lot of memory, and we all end up increasing our minimum heap because otherwise you just notice this thrashing, like when it's starting up, it just keeps needing more and more memory and it'll keep, allocating a larger heap, and it tends to cause performance problems, at least we assume it does. So then the recommendation is, okay, well, don't just wait for it to get to 2 gigs. And end up copying stuff and bumping the heap, but just start it out at, 2 gig minimum. And this is on desktop, it's a different usage, but I just wonder, like, is there a performance thing from starting out with a heap that's too small for most applications? Or, what is the overhead of having to allocate a larger heap?
I guess the main overhead there is just the extra garbage collections might cause preemption.
Okay.
So if you have bunch of garbage collections happening during the application startup.
Yeah.
Like, even though it won't necessarily pause your app, then if there's a lot of things running at once, then the system might decide to schedule the garbage collector instead of scheduling
right
your app, for example.
So do app images affect the initial heap size and the growth curve for that as well?
App
images. Can you
Okay.
A part that we've talked about, I think, multiple places was about the profile guided optimization aspects of Android, and about how while you're running your application, it's being jitted and profile information is being collected. And the profile information is persisted, is kept around for a compilation that happens in the background, something we call the idle maintenance service, to come back and optimize your application. And that optimizing the application runs. And part of that is some of the profile information we collected was which classes were important during startup of your application, during the first few seconds of application. And we lay out an initial heap snapshot, effectively, of the application as part of this app image, so that when the application comes up, a lot of the initial classes are already there in a piece of heap. Now, that doesn't necessarily give you the large memory allocations that you're talking about needing, but it at least gets the initial classes into the heap quicker. Maybe you avoid the first couple of GCs or first couple of heap growths that would be required if the application image was already large enough to hold some of the key things during startup. That's what I was asking Matthew about.
Yeah, that does help. I think right now it doesn't count even towards your heap size, so I guess you get a free lunch there.
I was going to ask a similar question, which is, do we know, like, well, this, you know, Gmail ran before. Did we know the last time it ran how large it was, and can we take that into account the next time it's launched?
We're not keeping that in profile information at the moment, right?
Yeah, so since we store profile information, we could probably start storing things like that in there to just kind of make things a little bit smoother, maybe. That's definitely an idea of something we could do in the future. Yeah. Currently, it's not done, though.
Maybe even keeping some kind of a growth curve estimate, right? It's probably where you were when you left, because Gmail can tend to grow if you're looking at large attachment-rich pages or something, perhaps.
Yeah, but at least some general trend line of where it tends to.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion.
Tends to operate. It was a more general question of like, what is the information that we track? Because I knew about the profile stuff. Okay, here's the code that we need to compile. Because now we're running, as of, was it the N release where we started doing. It originally, in Dalvik, it was all jitted. And then in Lollipop, it was all pre-compiled.
Yep.
Right? So it would install the application, then it would compile, and then it was all natively compiled code when it launched. And now we're in this in-between world where it starts out jitted, and then we figure out what you actually need to compile. And now we have this sort of this hybrid model, right?
Right.
But then is there any profile information that we store, or is it all just about, what is the code that we need to optimize?
I mean, it's not just the code. In some sense, I guess it is the code, but it's the classes that were used, instantiated during the startup of the application, some initial few seconds, as well as the set of methods that were executed both during that startup time and later got to be hot enough that we jitted them. So the idea being that the classes are about laying out this app image, getting those classes, their layout figured out and persisted to a file that we can map in at the start, as well as guiding the ahead of time compiler that runs during the idle maintenance service to put the code out for those methods. We're also doing some behind the scenes other work involving layout, trying to order those in ways that improve the paging efficiency and the cache efficiency. And that's something new that we did for O as well.
I was going to ask about that next. So go ahead.
So, any app developer probably knows that, an application consists, you have an APK and it has some set of DEX files that contain the Java language, compiled artifacts, that are being run on the application. And so we looked at a number of applications and looked at the memory footprint that they have. And especially when you're in very memory constrained environments, what's being paged in as an application runs, and you see that the DEX files were a large fraction of the clean memory. That is the memory that could be paged in and paged out without having to be pinned in memory because they're not swappable. The DEX files used a lot of memory, and we looked at this and looked at some applications we saw out there and some thoughts that we had internally were maybe the locality of the DEX files wasn't what it could be. Maybe, for instance, the methods that you are going to compile later or you're going to interpret during startup first, it would be better if those were laid out next to each other so that when you bring one page in from disk, you actually get multiple methods rather than you bring in a bunch of methods that aren't executed and one that you really needed.
Right.
So during the idle maintenance compile now, we take the same profile information we were talking about before, and we take the application DEX files and rewrite them on disk to exploit that locality. So when you actually run after the first idle maintenance compile, you get an improved amount of memory. We saw between 30 and 60% improvements in the amount of DEX memory that was pulled in. And for some large applications, this can be, you know, tens of megabytes of memory that you're talking about for DEX. And it improves the startup time because you've paged fewer pages in.
Okay. I didn't know. I remember when you were talking about this in the I/O talk, I didn't know if you had interesting numbers from startup time or if it was just a bit more general than that.
Startup time's been a little harder for us to actually measure than we want. And that's one of the things we're really working on for P is actually trying to have a good solid measurement that we can use for this.
Yeah.
But I think we did see significant numbers on the order of tens of milliseconds improvements on some of the big applications.
So. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, which can help. There are some apps that take seconds. That'd be nice to cut down.
Right.
All right. So yeah, that was the other one that I remember. The other major improvement I remember was the locality and start time. Were there other things? There's certainly performance stuff, but I think there are, that will wait for a future episode. Was there other stuff in GC allocation memory in general?
I don't. We covered most of that for at least the O-release stuff.
Yep. Okay. Maybe there will be more in the future.
Yeah.
So I'm also curious, part of my brain is always thinking about like, where did Android come from? So what were you working on before? So when did you join, Matthew?
Well, I joined in 2013. So I was an intern before here in 2012. And I was basically working on art stuff from the beginning.
Oh, okay. So yeah, you never worked on Dalvik?
Not really. I mean, it fixed a bug or two, but it was just kind of, everyone was really focusing all their efforts on art already in 2012.
What release was that? Remind me.
That was basically a KitKat release.
Okay. All right. I mean, it must have been under wraps for a while then, because art was pretty big.
Right. So yeah, maybe, I think Dalvik was just kind of in maintenance mode back then. Everyone was kind of really focusing on art.
Okay.
Based on our team.
And my recollection is a large part of the reason for that was we kind of hit the limit with Dalvik. I think we even talked about this on the show before, where like it was written, again, non-GC, non-runtime person speaking. It was written for a different world in which like saving memory and running in a constrained memory environment was priority number one. And the amount of optimizations that runtime could do were quite small. It couldn't know the scope of things that were happening outside the method. It was really more of a line-by-line based optimization thing. And I assume similar limitations on the memory side. So when the runtime team wanted to do more, it was basically sort of a rewrite.
Yeah, I think it's the rewrite too. I guess Dalvik is mostly C and not C++. So I guess moving to C++ kind of helps, especially for large code bases, at least in my opinion.
How so?
Well, just you can use templates and other abstractions.
Yeah.
You have to get less problems with pointers and things like that that can cause memory leaks and things like that.
Okay.
I think, as you can imagine, that the applications that we serve, the applications being a mix of Java language and Java native interface methods, et cetera, we get some very interesting and exotic bugs that come from maybe Java native interface things interacting badly with the heap, et cetera. I think that a lot of the heap management that we're able to do, and especially Matthew put in a feature called heap poisoning, for
that doesn't
us to be,
sound good.
Well, the idea being to catch some of these heap bugs that we find in a way that we can act on, that we can actually, while we're in beta, we can see these cases where when we were copying, something got goofed up and we're still holding a reference to the old space rather than the new space, et cetera.
Yeah.
C++ gives you linguistic support for these kinds of things with things like unique pointers, et cetera, that make it much easier to do these kinds of features that enable us to improve the quality of the system we're trying to build.
Okay. Nice. Okay. And how about you?
I caught myself at the beginning of this almost giving my previous title, in fact. That's why I, before this I was working on the Chrome browser.
And maybe you still are. Huh? I don't know.
And I was one of the founders of a project called Native Client, which was about running native code securely in the web browser. We wrote a system that used software fault isolation to execute native code in the browser sandbox. And this is a feature that's still being used in Chrome OS and other places. But it was a way that you could take C++ code, compile it very readily, and run it securely in the browser.
And what was the domain? Was this for games?
So we originally thought we were going to change the world with this, but I think games were the place that we got the most uptake initially, because okay. people really wanted, in those days, JavaScript performance was measured in, you know, 5x worse than native sure. code, and we were offering 80, 85% of native code performance securely. So we also got a lot of utilities. We had a complete development environment called DevEnv that you could run a compiler, Emacs, et cetera, on a Chromebook completely inside the web browser. This was, and people were using it for tools like that. The secure shell application in Chrome OS is right. still using this for some high performance cryptography and other features like that really still demand the utmost performance are still right. being used today.
All right. Well, cool. I'm all out of questions and ideas. Is there anything that you think we missed in the discussion of memory?
I don't know.
I think not.
There was another topic in memory. I've forgotten it. All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.